And it hits me, oh my gosh, this is that triangle.
You know, there's explanation for everything that occurred in the Rendlesham Forest incident that doesn't involve aliens at all.
It was completely silent. It comes right over our heads.
He saw a classic flying saucer, really, standing in the clearing.
He turned over to my father and held his hand, and he looked in his eyes and he said, "We're not alone."
Welcome to Podcast UFO for our live show. We're live every Wednesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on podcastufo.com. During the show, feel free to participate live in our chat room. And don't forget to like us on our very active Facebook page.
To the show, I'm Martin Willis, your host. We have a real exciting show for you this evening. Later on, we have Selma Siddick and we have Randy Nickerson coming up to talk about the Ariel school incident. And in studio, I have a guest. I'm going to introduce him in just a minute. Last Christmas, I had a little, not a contest, I just gave away a couple of days at my guest house and for someone to sit in studio, and Alan won. How about that? How are you, Alan? Welcome.
I'm good. I appreciate you having me here, and I'm enjoying it. Thank you very much.
And you came up from Alabama.
That's correct.
Yeah.
That's correct.
Well, I think our camera is slowly going down here. I have to try to work on that on a break here. Anyway, thanks so much for making the trip up. And can you talk about your sighting? I want the people to hear the sighting you told me this morning.
Okay. It's just kind of what got me interested in UFOs. It was in 1976. I lived in a small southern town, and I was at my grandmother's house with my grandmother and her sister. They lived together. And a lot of people at that time listened to police scanners. So we were listening to the police scanner, and they said that a town about 14 miles north of the town I lived in, the police there had seen a UFO, and it was headed south. So, of course, we go and jump in the car at my insistence. And we start heading south, and we're going up kind of the biggest hill in town. I wouldn't call it a mountain, but it was the biggest hill in town. And about three quarters of the way up the hill, a police car with lights on and siren blasting past us. And simultaneous with that, as I remember, there was a full moon that night, a bright object flying vertically, about, you know, three or four times the size of the moon, flying this way, stopped in front of the moon at the same time the police car went by. The next thing I remember is headed back toward home, passing where it happened almost the next thing I remember. And we never talked about it again. I mean, we never discussed it with each other. The topic never came up. I know that happens a lot of times.
It does, yeah.
In UFO situations, but that's what happened to me. I just,
wow. What about years later? Did you talk about it eventually?
Never talked about it with them. I mean, they would both be in their 100, you know, over 100 years old now, so they're both gone. Never talked about it years later. I don't remember when I started thinking about it again.
Yeah.
We just never discussed it, never really discussed it. And not only did we not discuss it with each other, I didn't discuss it with other people. I mean, it was just like it really had never happened. I mean, I just remember seeing it. Yeah. The police car went by. Next thing I remember, headed back toward home. I don't know if it was 5 minutes later or 5 hours later, because I don't know what time we left her house and what time we got back to her house. So,
so you were 17. Did you talk about it to other people?
No, don't remember talking about it to anybody at that time. It's just like, it's like it wasn't important, but that's not what it was. It's just like, strange that we didn't talk to each other about it.
Right.
I mean,
right.
You would think on the way home, you'd say, man, what was that? How did that happen?
Yeah.
Never discussed it.
How about that? Well, thanks for sharing that. That's great. Yeah. All right. So Alejandro is coming up with the news. Welcome to the show, Alejandro. And we have to say, you couldn't get your camera fixed.
Yeah, I couldn't. I don't know what it is. The camera is not working mode.
You got that cameo with your smiling face up there. That's okay. So how's everything going, Alejandro? What's happening with the UFO news this week?
Yeah, keeping really busy, but things are going well. So my story for today was a lot of fun. This is an interview that Jeremy Corbell did with Eugene Roddenberry, who is Gene Roddenberry's son.
Wow.
Yeah. So the guy who started, and this is a video. So it's really cool. He interviews him and they talk about aliens and UFOs and stuff. He says that he and his father had not had a sighting, but he is into the topic. He believes in aliens, he says, and life on other planets. And he really roots for ufologists and stuff like that. So he had a lot of positive things to say. And he essentially said that, you know, he believes that, you know, at some point soon, you know, the big discovery will be made. So it's kind of fun. It's a fun interview. And it reminds me of the Star Trek movie First Contact, which, of course, is when humans first met ETs. And wouldn't it be nice to be there, especially if it's a nice thing, kind of like the Vulcans, you know, these wise people with these cool pointy ears coming down to say, hello, we are here to help you.
Okay.
So, yeah. Nope. Are you there?
I am there. I had to. The camera was actually going down and down and down and down. So I just had to make a quick adjustment.
Oh, I see. So yeah, so that's a really cool story. I think that's a fun one that people can see on the website. Any questions around that one?
You have any questions?
I don't have any questions. That sounds a lot more pleasant than the guy I called last week who saw the gray planet get destroyed. I'd rather it happen that way.
Yeah, so I had taken a call that was very interesting. I'll just put it that way.
You'll just leave it at that, huh? Another story that we wrote about is a sighting in Florida, Tampa Bay area. This guy was in Tarpon Springs, which is just north of Tampa there, kind of at really close to the bay. But he saw this over the ocean. And what he describes is a rectangular craft, a skinny rectangular craft. He felt it to be about 100 miles away over the Gulf of Mexico, headed south. He said he watched it for a few seconds, moving slowly, and then boom, it took off at really quick speed. He figured it was going to the south, you know, near Tampa. He actually took a snapshot of a map showing where he felt the object was and where it was moving. And he spotted this object when he went outside to have a smoke at about 11 o'clock during the day. So this was a daytime sighting. So he said he saw it clearly. Really interesting. And he sounds credible. Of course, MUFON will do an investigation of this and we'll see what they discover. But yeah, he said at first he thought it was a helicopter, but he looked more closely and he was like, nope, that's not what that is. And they're used to seeing helicopters out there because they have a lot of military in the area. So it's a really interesting sighting, and it gave me an excuse to look up a UFO photo that we have in our archives, which is one of the more shocking photos, perhaps, well, really, I think it is the most shocking photo of an alleged rectangular craft. And people have to look at this craft. I think you saw it, and it is pretty cool looking, right?
Oh, it's today you just think it's something Photoshop, but this is back in 1984. Seven, right?
Right. Yeah. This picture, it was allegedly taken in 1987 by this guy named Joe Clower. He said he was driving with his camera in his car when he spotted the object, this dark flying rectangle, took this picture, and eventually he had sent it to Wendell Stevens, who then recorded this whole event. He said he was in Federal Heights, Colorado, and I'm from Colorado, and you can see hills mountains really in the background. It does look like Colorado. And like you said, this was in 87. I think together had discovered that Photoshop really wasn't launched until 1990. So if this was Photoshop, the picture allegedly predates that. So really interesting photograph. Now, the only thing there's a couple of things. It's one of those too good to be true pictures.
Exactly. I was just going to say that. Yeah.
Yeah. So it looks great. It's just rectangular and you can see it on its side with these four lights around at each corner. But it doesn't, you know, to me look like I can't spot any evidence of you know, hoaxing in the photo. The only one of the things that does make me a little bit doubtful is that this guy, Joe Clower, and his buddy allegedly took a lot of UFO photos. So if you're familiar with Wendell Stevens' UFO photo books, and you can buy them at ufocongress.com, the store there actually, there's quite a few pictures from these guys, and they're all kind of too good to be true pictures. So that makes it a little suspicious. They were guys who were outside a lot and got a hold of him and said, hey, we see UFOs a lot. We'd love to share our pictures with you. And so I don't know. It's a cool looking picture. And it was a perfect example of what this person described. So, yeah, interesting.
Right. You know, the saying out there is like, how come we're not seeing, you know, so many, how come we're just seeing blurry photos?
Mm-hmm.
And then anytime something is really clear, you know, the red flags go up. Everyone just assumes that it's fake. You know, it is possible. It's a real picture.
On the other hand, Alejandro, how many UFOs have you seen?
Me personally, I've had, yeah. I don't know. I would say maybe only two or three sightings that I thought were strange. Nothing that extraordinary. Two so I strange think of when, right now.
So it's strange when guys get a lot of really good photos when other people are not seeing any at all, or, you know, maybe one or two in their
exactly. Life. And historically, when these people have come forward, even early on in, let's say, the '70s or the '80s, you had these people who would take, you know, photos of UFOs quite frequently. They turned out to be hoaxes. Those, I feel personally that Billy Myers very substantially been, shown to be a hoaxer, at least the majority of his pictures. He even claims that the government stole his pictures and replaced these ones that are slightly different, that are fake, which he has a lot of wild explanations when it comes to some of his antics. But others would be, there's a guy in New Mexico. I forget his name right now, but that was the situation with him. So we've had a few people through history that, and I think they just get too cocky. They'll create a couple fakes that, you know, look, wow, they look really extraordinary and everybody thinks they're real, and they get so much attention that they create more, and then eventually, you know, they get busted and the whole house of cards comes tumbling down. Mm-hmm. I'm not aware of any debunking of these guys. It's Joe Clower out there. There may be some listeners who are, and I'd love to hear from you, but yeah, fascinating photo.
It is, yeah. Who is that guy that they've done a couple of documentaries on that was actually filming like out of it? I think it was Manhattan. And it seemed like over and over again, that was just too bizarre. Like he was seeing all these UFOs.
I think that you're thinking of a gentleman out of in Italy. I think he was even, I think in Rome. I can't remember what town. But yeah, his photos. He sent us some of his originals and we could tell they were things like buttons on glass, because if you examine the photos, you could see the glare on the glass from light in the room. And so it was a bummer, but yeah, unfortunately that's another example.
Right.
So, and that's what people suspected, is that he had a skylight. And he said he climbed up this ladder and would poke out of the skylight, and that's where he would get his photos. But it turns out it looks like he would actually put stuff on top of the skylight.
That's exactly the guy I'm thinking of. Wow.
Yeah, and then take pictures. It's
hard to believe any of them.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. That's the issue. And I suspect that perhaps, I'm open to the idea, perhaps a couple of Billy Myers' first photos were real, were real anomalous things that he saw. But certainly the more spectacular ones, like the one that the photo
right behind me.
You all. Now, that's not a Billy Meyer photo. That's like they took the Bob Lazar UFO and then put it into an image. But it's supposed to look just like a famous Billy Meyer photo.
Yeah.
One that I have a poster of. And that it's an example of these too good to be trues that are too good to be true. So
that's right. That's right. So you got anything else going on?
Let's see. I think that is about it. There's a couple of other interesting stories out there. There's a GOP politician running for something somewhere. I can't remember the details, who said she was abducted when she was a child. There's also a gentleman in the UK who says he was abducted, and he's written a book about that. Recently, and that's been featured, especially in UK tabloids, but that's spilled out to other media. I haven't written, we don't have stories on that, but those are some of the stories you can find in our headline section at openminds.tv.
Yes, you know, when if someone is running for any type of public office, don't you think they probably just squash that, you know, chance?
It probably is. You never know these days. I would say normally, yes. I mean, we've had people in the past that have had that issue. However, one of my talks that I do is strange alien cases, and there's a gentleman in Russia, and his name is Kirsan Milosevic. I can't remember his last name, but Kirsan, and he was the president of Kalmykia, and he's friends with Putin, and he's actually the president of like the World Chess Federation.
Oh,
and
yes.
Mm-hmm. He believes, you know, he tells his story over and over again that he was abducted, and then doesn't seem to have hurt his relationship with Putin nor any of his political standings. He's gotten in trouble political wise, and he's in trouble with the United States, but that has more to do with some fishy business dealings. He is a millionaire, rich guy. Ilyumzhinov, that's his name, Kirsan Ilyumzhinov. But so it doesn't always hurt that around the country. In the United States, though, we haven't had a situation where an alleged abductee has been successful, in the political realm. Now, UFO sightings, there are people who have had those who have done well in politics.
Yeah, President Carter, mm-hmm. You know, publicly admitting it.
Yeah, Carter, it's the big one, and yeah, he did fine. That didn't seem to have an effect on his ability to move forward. And Clinton, you know, it doesn't seem to. Bill Clinton has been outspoken about his belief in the phenomena, and but it doesn't. I don't think it's hurt him politically. So yeah,
right. So Alejandro, so that's it. We are having trouble getting our guest on.
Okay, I could give you another piece of news though.
Yeah, do that for now. Sure.
Hopefully people aren't getting bored of the whole Tom DeLonge story, but I can give you some some background secret kind of stuff. Is that
secret background stuff. That's great.
I mean, they have alluded to these videos that they're going to be sharing here soon. And it's something that, because they mentioned, I guess we can kind of talk about, but this is kind of exciting. So allegedly we will be seeing fairly soon here a video from the DOD that at least this guy who had a job similar to Nick Pope, you know, looking into unknown threats, like he called them, unknown objects. This will be a video that where at least he was not able to determine what it is. And it's an example of what he believes is, you know, leads him to believe that there are aircraft that exhibit technology beyond our own that are coming here. And that's how he feels, this gentleman, Lou Elizondo. So that's pretty exciting news and something to look forward to.
Yeah, awesome. Great. All right. So, we're still having trouble with the guest, and you're probably out of stories, aren't you?
I'm never out of stories.
Yeah. Well, hey, while we're waiting, let's talk quickly about who you have for coming up in February.
Oh, okay. Yeah. You want to talk about that? Oh, that is cool. Let me look it up so I can remember. But we have some pretty exciting stuff, in my humble opinion. One of these people that we're having is a sociologist. I like new people. People haven't seen before. And this is one of them, Susan Palmer. And she's a sociologist, and she has in particular looked at the topic of UFO religions and these religions such as Aralian. She actually spent a lot of time with them and why they believe what they believe and what is it they do believe. And she finds it fascinating. And what's interesting is she's not quick to say they're wrong or that, you know, these alien contacts that their leader claims to have had didn't happen. She's more about documenting it, and which makes it fascinating. So she talks about, she's going to be talking about the Raelians and what they believe and why, but also other groups that have had a similar belief. So I think that's going to be fascinating. Another one that we're going to have that I'm really excited about is Robbie Graham. And he's from the UK. He wrote, Silver Screen Saucers is the name of his book. But he has another book out also that is kind of a compilation of many of the people that you and I have had on our shows that we like, people like Greg Bishop and Ryan Sprague and some of these. It's called UFOs Reframing the Debate. So we got these articles from these guys to talk about where should ufology go and to kind of self-criticize ourselves. And that's what he's mostly going to be talking about is, you know, where should they go? What should be going on? But he's also going to be talking about Hollywood and what he calls the impossibility of disclosure. So the typical idea of disclosure, how that's just kind of a, he doesn't think that's possible, which I think is interesting, especially given, you know, personally what happened with Tom DeLonge and these interesting people who have come forward. So that will be a lot of fun. Another Hollywood person we're going to have is Bryce Zabel. Oh, and one reason, another reason that Robbie Graham is so great is this is going to be his first and last lecture on UFOs in the United States. He's done some lectures in the UK, but he doesn't want to do lectures in UFOs anymore. He's going to focus on writing books on a lot of other topics. And even though he's been pretty popular out here, he's kind of done. He wants to move on to other things. And this is, like he says, kind of his last hurrah where he gets to come out and share, you know, his opinions and views and talk with the community before he moves on.
Wow. You better hope he doesn't want to go out in flames.
Oh, you know. Geez, don't say that. That's awful.
That's so, how I'm going to go out in my last show.
Really? You're just going to light it up? Don't do that. That makes me think of those, like the monk who lit himself on fire, and they do that sometimes. That'd be awful.
I'm not going to go to that extreme.
You would be extremely popular. You would make the news and everything if you did that on your podcast on YouTube.
Probably get something to go viral.
Go viral. But I don't think that would be worth it.
Wow. And so you may have some other guests or you're totally booked already.
That's it. We're only going to have those two or three people.
Yeah. Excellent.
No, we have, of course, like 20 people that are going to be speaking, and we've got we're listing more and more pretty much almost at least every week. So we'll have it all listed in the next couple of weeks. But we're going to have Linda Howe. She's going to be talking about military whistleblowers. So she's got some very interesting things, some very interesting people have said, and she's going to be sharing that. We're bringing, because we are the International UFO Congress, we've got someone else coming from New Zealand, and she actually is someone who studied abductions and feels that she's had her own experiences. She'll be speaking on that. From the Ancient Aliens television show, we've got Reverend Michael J. Carter, who's a, like I said, reverend, and he specializes in kind of, you know, Bible mythology and how he feels, you know, some of these stories could be and possibly are about UFOs and aliens. We're going to have Steve Bassett, who's been out of the country and he isn't doing any talks anymore so much, especially in the United States. He's kind of upset with the United States not disclosing and everything, but he is excited about the Tom DeLonge stuff. And, He's a good friend to Open Minds, and he loves the site, and he's going to be coming to the UFO Congress to do a talk from the UK, so that'll be a lot of fun. We're having Jennifer Stein talk about crop circles. I haven't seen this talk before, but she's done it a couple times, including at our local Phoenix MUFON organization. And everybody raves about it, about how great this talk is. So I've never heard one negative comment. People love it. So I'm really excited for that. We'll have Don Schmidt, of course, of Roswell, but he's going to be talking about, this is funny, a lot of people don't know, Don Schmidt's been in this field for a long time investigating UFOs. In fact, he was a researcher with Dr. J. Allen Hynek and his KUFOS organization. Of course, Hynek was an astronomer who aided the Air Force during from 47 to 69, the entire time that they looked into UFOs. He was a skeptic who became a believer and started KUFOS, the Center for UFO Studies, and Don worked with him. In fact, that's where Don first heard about Roswell. You know, people like Stanton started talking about, oh, a UFO crash in Roswell, and Don's like, what? That sounds ridiculous. But, of course, now Don is a big Roswell researcher, and that's what he's mostly known for. But what he's going to be talking about is J. Allen Hynek, and that's exciting to me because I'm fascinated by Hynek. And so he's going to be talking about, did Hynek know the truth about UFOs? So I think this ought to be interesting, some behind the scenes about Hynek and his research. There's been lots of rumors about, you know, Hynek being involved with government agencies, Hynek having his own sighting, Hynek believing in aliens. He always said he never wanted to push forward the extraterrestrial hypotheses because they couldn't prove that, and that he wanted to remain open to all possibilities, which I think is wise as a scientist. So this ought to be a fascinating talk.
All right. Well, I have Randy calling in now. So
all right.
But hang in just 1 minute.
Because me to the curb.
Not quite yet. Hang in just 1 second because I'm not sure if I need to know, Alejandro. Randy, are you there? Alejandro, can you hear him?
I cannot.
You cannot. Go ahead and say something again, Randy. So, okay, you cannot hear him. You cannot hear him, Alejandro?
No.
Okay, so hang in, Alejandro. I'm going to see if I can figure this out. And I apologize to the listener. Let's see. Get everything set right here. Randy, it's not going to work, I'm afraid. So can you just keep trying Google? I know. Try it on your cell phone if you have a late model iPhone. All right, try it on that. Okay. All right. Thank you. Goodbye. Well, I had two choices, Alejandro. I could relate every word that he says, or I could I could just try to drag a little more time out of you. He's going to try something else.
Well, I could relate every word you said. It would be easier for you.
Oh, yeah. That'd be easier. Yeah. So, I don't think we mentioned what we're talking about on your conference. And for the new listener, it's the International UFO Congress. Takes mm-hmm. place usually every February, right? It's always in February, isn't it?
Always every February. This year, it's February 14th to the 18th. And I could keep going. I'm always really excited about all the people we bring on.
Yeah, and that's in Phoenix. Well, it's just outside of Phoenix. Beautiful.
It's just outside, yeah. Place. Yeah, so you've been there, so you know what a gorgeous place it is.
Wonderful, yeah. And, I know it's not winter yet, but when it is winter, it's a wonderful place to be.
It's wonderful right now. It kind of is winter.
It is? Yeah.
I lived in Colorado, I felt October was winter.
Just to let the listener know out there, the live listener especially, is Selma Siddick, who is the witness at the Ariel School. I did a screen test with her earlier, not a screen test, a sound test, and she will be coming on in just a few minutes. Matter of fact, maybe even 1 minute. So we'll be seeing her come up. So, if Randy can't join the show, that wouldn't be too good, but still we will have her on coming up real soon. So, in theory, Alejandro, she'll be contacting me like in a minute. So I don't know if you get to see it on the screen or not, but I'll let you know. Yeah.
Great. Just let me know. So you want me to keep going or something?
Yeah,
or?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Okay, cool. Cool. Yeah. So a couple of other people we're going to have. We're going to have Cheryl Costa. She writes for Syracuse New Times. She's a columnist, a weekly columnist there. But what thing she did, do you have her on
lately? Yes, I have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So your listeners will know she wrote this book called something about UFOs. I can't remember the name of the book right now. Do you remember the name of the book? It's like UFO National Statistics and Trends, we'll I think it's called.
Okay, hey, we got our guest. All right.
I'll wrap it up then.
Sorry, I don't have the book right here in front of me, but...
No problem. Yeah. It's just what's great about what she did is she wrote about all of these areas, UFO sightings throughout the country, and she also pushed it. Like, she went out to the media to let people know. So her book got tons and tons of publicity all over the country, which is really exciting. But you can read more about them at UFOCongress.com.
Great. Thanks so much, Alejandro. Thanks for filling in.
No problem. Thank you.
All right. Take care.
You too.
All right, Selma, how are you? Can you hear me, Selma? Selma, can you hear me? Hello? Hello? So much for the sound check that worked before. Oh, she's gone. Okay, hopefully she will call back in. And, you know, I had a thought when I was doing this Google Hangout. The reason I did it is because I know Randy's well-versed in it. For some reason, it's not working for him. But also, I just thought it would work for people that wanted to join in as we go along here. And hopefully, we'll hear back from Selma. She should be back any minute. Now my camera's down. Oh, I see. Okay. No? There it is. Okay. So while we're waiting, I might as well talk to you since you're right here.
Are you kidding me? Okay. Yeah. What do you want to talk about?
So what do you think as you've listened to the show for how long now, would you say?
I would say at least 3 or 4 years.
Oh, that long. Yeah. And what do you think is like the most interesting case that I've talked about?
Oh, I, or
some of them anyway.
I think the Canadian case where the UFO went underwater.
Oh, that's where I went up in Shag Harbor.
Shag Harbor. That's yep. A very interesting case for me. The one tonight's interesting because there were so many. And of course, you haven't done a show on it. Where you hope you're about to, but there were so many witnesses at that one time that makes it very interesting. But I like the shows that talk about specific cases a lot more than other kind of shows that,
yeah,
about talking about UFO and the UFO subject in general.
All right, I think Hi. We have you. We have you.
Sorry,
how are you?
I couldn't connect earlier. I'm well, thanks. How are you?
Great, thanks so much. We thought this was going to be. For a minute there, we thought this was going to be a disaster because, unfortunately, Randy is not able. He's not been able to connect with us.
Oh no!
He did. Yeah, he did fine on the test, and I could get him through a phone line, but the phone is not going through my computer and into, so no one can hear him basically. But welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for. It's a real honor actually to have you on. You know, this case I consider one of the very best cases out there with all the witnesses. And so I have a number of questions for you, but in your own words, I'd love to hear directly from a witness like you. Are you having trouble with your phone?
I am. Sorry. I'm going to try and hold it as steady as I can. It was great earlier, but now I'm kind of moving it. So I apologize.
Okay, no problem. So can you tell, you know, you probably had, everyone had different vantage points when things were happening in the beginning. I heard somewhere there was flashes of light first. Did you see that?
Yes. My first sort of experience within the experience itself was seeing flashing lights in the distance. I don't know if you are very familiar, but the school that I attended was very rural. So used to be a farm, so there's a lot of open space. Mm-hmm. And so our playground was essentially just not dirt, but kind of dirt. I don't know if that's how it is now, but that it was a very, very big space of land. And then the boundary of that playground were essentially the trunks of trees. And beyond that was bush, very tall grass, savanna region, lots of trees, lots of kopjes. It wasn't mountainous per se, but they were, you know, little kopjes, sort of smaller hills. And that's where the flashes that I saw were.
Now, did everyone around you, like, say, hey, what's that? What's going on? And did you all start talking to each other, like, what's happening?
Yeah, I mean, initially, what it was, it's kind of, you know, you start to question yourself. It's like, okay, did I see that? And then there were a few of the people who were pointing in the same direction where the flashing lights or the flashes were coming from. And so we all sort of gathered and looked at each other and said, did you see that? And kind of corroborated each other's stories. Like, yeah, I saw that. What does it look like? It looks like flashing lights. But it started off very slowly in that most of us, you know, weren't sure and exactly what we had seen. And so we're kind of just like, okay, did I see that? Didn't I see that? But then when a few of us kind of clustered together, we realized that we were all seeing the same thing.
Now, there was one little girl that was interviewed by Dr. Mack that said she heard a sound. And when he asked her what the sound was, she said it was like someone was blowing into a flute. Did you happen to hear any sound?
I did not hear any sound. I would say the most, I mean, other than the entire thing being almost like an out-of-body experience, time seemed to be the really kind of odd thing that stuck out in that it seemed like it had slowed down immensely.
Really?
I had no concept of time. Yeah. I had no concept of time from the time that I had seen the flashing lights to the time that I saw the being to when I let go of my friend Emma's hand. I do not know how much time went by. It seemed like everything was moving really slowly.
Isn't that interesting?
Me.
You know, that's what a lot of people say during a car accident, everything like moves really slowly. It seems to. I know there was only one adult. There was a parent that was in a tuck shop, I guess it was called.
Yes.
I don't even know what that is. But
a tuck shop is like, it's what we have on our school premises where you sell candy and fruit and soda. So we don't have cafeterias. We have, unless you go to boarding school, which I did in high school, so you'd have a cafeteria. But the tuck shop is really where you can buy all your treats. So lots of chocolates and all of that. That's where the only adult was on the playground, yes.
Yeah, and was that unusual? You know, I always wonder why there weren't teachers out among the children. Usually in most schools, when they go out to recess or something like that, the children go out with a teacher or two. So was it unusual that there wasn't a teacher?
Incredibly. And it was only because the teachers were having a staff meeting that particular day. They were all in their staff meeting and break was a little bit longer than usual, which we loved. And, you know, it was a Friday, so that was even better. And us as grade sixes were the oldest ones on the playground because the grade sevens were taking an exam because we have grade seven exams, end of year exams. And so we were kind of manning the playground and I remember certainly feeling like, yeah, you know, we're the oldest ones on the playground as you do, you know, at recess. But yes, there was one teacher in the tuck shop. I actually completely forgot about that. The tuck shop was located in an area where the younger children played. So the playground was essentially one big one big play area, if you can think of it, but the younger kids from grade one to about grade four had their own section. It wasn't separated, but they just had their own section that had swings and, you know, was kind of just their area that they played in.
Wow. Okay. So let's continue on to, you saw the flashes and it was over to this area where you were not allowed to go in. I know there were like a lot of trees. It was hard to get through. And so was there actually a fence there in front of this area you weren't supposed to go?
No, there was no fence. What it was literal tree trunks as the boundary of the playground. So if you can think of big eucalyptus trees, the trunks of those trees were what separated our playground from, you know, where we were not supposed to go beyond. But there was no fence. The rest of that was just open area, open bush. You could see as far as the eye would allow you beyond that. So there was no obstruction, really, other than those tree trunks.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. And so let's hear the rest. So did, now I know one of the children described that the craft went what appeared to go along like a power line. Or did you see anything like that?
I'm sorry, can you repeat that, Martin?
Yeah, one of the witnesses said that it appeared to go like along, I don't want to say a power line or some type of...
Oh, I see. I didn't see that, but there was a weird like buzz or hum that, again, I couldn't really make too... I couldn't make too much sense of because I just didn't know. You know, sometimes electric lines buzz, so... But it was a very, very loud buzz. And then also, given this whole time thing, I just wasn't sure if I was imagining it or what was going on. Like, I didn't really know what to make of it, but I did not see anything particularly near the power line. I definitely felt the buzz, a lot of buzz.
Yeah. Now, were you and your fellow schoolmates, were you drawn toward this area? I mean, did you all start, like, flowing down toward it to see what was going on?
We did eventually, and it was right by, you know, right by the logs, as we would call them. And we could sit on these logs sometimes and eat our lunch, which is what we would do. But we stood there and kind of just congregated a few of us and looked in the area where both the flashing lights were and wherever this buzzing sound was coming from the electric poles. And, you know, if I saw what I called the being or a being, that was maybe about 3 to 4 feet away from me, but
really?
it didn't cross over the boundary of the tree trunks. Never.
Really? And now what about the floating? Did it appear to be floating?
It did not appear to be floating for me. I saw it as being grounded on this like copy-like area. Like I keep saying, I was able to draw a craft to the best of my memory, but I did not see it floating.
Mm-hmm. What about on top of the craft? And did you think there were actually two beings, or was it or one that showed up twice?
That I don't know. I think that's a question that I may never know, but it's definitely a question I've asked myself since the experience, because I honestly couldn't tell you. If they were two, they were identical. There was no difference between the two. If they were in fact two, I have no idea.
Now, what about, I saw some of the pictures that were drawn, and some of them it showed with, or one at least showed with long hair, and others showed no hair at all. What do you remember seeing?
I remember seeing one that did not have hair. Mine did not have no facial hair, no, I mean, I couldn't tell if there was body hair because it was in the closest thing I can describe it as being in like a scuba diving suit, which I think is what I described it as when I was 11, because that was what I knew. That was like the closest thing I could relate it to. But I don't recall it did not have any hair, no facial hair, no hair in its head, nothing. almost skin was almost like porcelain, really.
Really? And was it like almost like a white color?
Yes. Well,
like a porcelain white?
Yeah, like yes, almost like a nude kind of porcelain kind of color is what I could best describe it. I think I said porcelain in that it just looked completely perfect. There was no blemish, there was no nothing. It just was so smooth, and it almost looked I think porcelain is just it's very firm, it's stiff, it's kind of stoic like. So if you were to think of a statue, you know, I'd be like, okay, it's kind of like a porcelain statue. Except that this being was moving, but it was, there was no, you know, the expression on its face was not one that I really understood. There was no smile, there was no frown, you know, there was no facial recognition for me to comprehend at that time.
Did it change at all, or did it stay exactly the same?
In terms of looks or location?
No, as far as any expressions. Like you said, the expressions were nothing you recognized. I'm just wondering if did it show any expressions at all? And looks like your screen froze. I don't know if you can hear me, but looks like it froze on your end. You may want to sign out and come back to us. And it might start working again on its own. Okay, she'll be back. I'm sure she'll be signing back in. I think it's really, really interesting so far. And I will, if the time comes in the next hour and people in the chat and listening live would like to join us on Google Hangouts and ask her a question. That is, here she's coming back.
I don't know. I've got full signal on my end. Can you guys hear me okay?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you're fine. Yeah, it's good to have you back.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And so basically what I was asking is if it changed any expression at all, or did it stay exactly the same like a statue?
For me, what I remember is that it stayed exactly the same. It moved from place to place in terms of its location, but its physical appearance did not change.
Yeah. We have Randy on finally. I don't know what happened, but I think I see him. And hey, I'm going to join him in. Hey, Randy, how are you?
Hi, Salma. Hi, Martin. How are you? I'm back.
Great. I'm glad you made it. We've having a couple of troubles. I don't know if I'm going to be doing Google Hangout anymore. Salma has been right into the story. Do you mind if I continue with her and then Randy will talk about the film after?
Okay. Sure.
So back to you, Salma. Okay. Can you repeat how close you were, how close this thing got to you or you got to it?
Sure. I think it was between like 3 to 5 feet.
Now, how did you feel? I mean, were you scared?
I was confused. I was very intrigued. I wasn't sure, but I don't remember feeling fear. No,
really?
Not fear that I wasn't. No, I just think I didn't know what I was looking at. Mm-hmm. I didn't understand what I was looking at. So if I felt confused or fearful to that degree, yes, but not to the degree that I thought that this thing was going to harm me.
And when it moved, did it move unlike a human?
Well, when it moved, what I remember is that I would see it over here, and then I would blink, maybe. I mean, again, I don't know about, it seemed like I would blink and it would be over on another side. So I can't really say if it moved like a human, because that's very unhuman-like, like no human can move that way. So the answer to that would be no. But I do remember seeing the being in more than one place in a given period of time, but I don't know what that time frame was. Like I said, I have no idea.
Salma, we have an in-house, in-studio guest named Alan, and he has a question for you. Go ahead.
Hey, Salma. Hi, how are you? I love your accent and your personality. Oh.
Thank you.
Did any of the children consider it a religious experience, or was it just automatically UFO? I don't know what religion the people at the school were, but did that ever come up at all?
Definitely not. The school was predominantly, I think most of the people at the school were Christian, and I am Muslim, so there's no conversation about that in the religion, certainly, that I was brought up with, nor the people that I know at school. But there was also no outside influences to what a UFO was, per se. I don't know if we knew at that time what we had seen. I don't think we understood fully at 11 what it was we were looking at. We just knew that a few of us had seen something that was very, very unusual, in that we hadn't seen it before, in that not everybody saw it, in that we all had different experiences from it. We felt different things from it. We saw different things. People got different messages. That much we knew was unique and unusual to us. But I don't know if I certainly didn't. I can only speak for myself. I don't believe that any of us classified it as a UFO. We just said it was, you know, something that we'd never seen before.
And one more question. When it was over, is that all you could talk about? I mean, was it just the buzz? That's you couldn't go back to class. I mean,
it took a long time. It was for a little bit of time, but we also come from a very strict educational system where you don't have time to be messing around. So after all the interviews, and I honestly don't know, Randall would know more about how many we had because there were so many. It was fun at first to be called out of class to, you know, or talk about what I had seen. And even though I didn't fully comprehend what it was, but to have somebody be like, oh, okay, you know, I thought, well, it's good. Okay, at least this person believes me, or at least they're asking me what I saw, so that's good. Because, you know, it was very hard to convince adults about what it is we had seen. But then it got a bit tiresome, you know. It got kind of tiring at the end, and I was happy to not talk about it for a while, and I didn't until Randall popped into my life in 2010.
Wow. Now, what about your mother? Did she believe you right off the bat?
Yes, she did. My mom did. I was surprised, but happy. Like, I was happy that she was open-minded enough to believe in me. Like, she believed in me. And that was what was the most important. And because I took a while to tell my parents, but then I thought, well,
uh-oh, there it goes again. Randy, she's back. Are you back?
I'm back.
You're back. Okay, yeah, so it just froze a little bit there. Well, that's great. Now, going back to the encounter itself, do you think you actually made eye contact with this being, whatever it was?
Yes, I did. I know I did. The drawing that I was able to sketch was the exact thing that I saw, and it was this, like, we locked eyes. I again don't know for how long, but I definitely looked at this being dead in the eye.
Wow. And what did you feel when you did that? I mean, you said you weren't afraid, but was it still just a curiosity at that time, or did you feel? I know some people feel as though they got a message of some type. Did you have any?
I did not have a message. If I do, I don't know what that message is. It hasn't fully computed, maybe. It was not calming. I don't quite know how to describe it, but it was like nothing I've ever felt before. There was no fear. It was just almost as though this being was looking into my soul, like it knew me, like it knew who I was. That is the best that I can describe, this sort of like interlocking of eyes for however long it was. But I was with my friend Emma at the time, and the moment I walked away from her because I had a younger brother and sister also on the playground because I was worried about them. The moment I walked away from her, I didn't see the being again. And, you know, I stopped, dropped the gaze and walked away and checked on my siblings. And that was my experience. That was sort of the extent of my experience.
Now, when you made eye contact, did you feel there was an intelligence?
I don't know if I knew, I would even have known what that was at that time. To be honest, I don't know. I felt like this thing knew me, knew some things about me, knew some things about a lot of things, if that makes sense. And I think I told that to my mom one time when she asked me, like, what do you think the point of this was? And I said, I don't know. I think I'm supposed to know some. I think that these things came because they know a lot of things about the earth and they're trying to tell us some things. They know some things, but I don't know what those things are. And at 11, you know, I remember her looking at me like, okay, that's quite existential. But I mean, I didn't know what that was. I had no idea. And I think that that's something I'm still discovering. I don't believe I have any one answer. It's something that unravels with each day, with each year. The more that I talk about it, the more clarity I get. So I have Randall to thank for that because I didn't for a very, very long time.
Yes. Yeah, I totally get that. I've talked to people like Travis Walton. I'm sure you've heard his name before.
Yes.
And there was
actually
a long time.
I haven't met him yet.
Oh, there was a long time. He just didn't even want to deal with it or talk about it or think about it. You know, one of the girls that Dr. Mack interviewed, every time I see that clip, I get goosebumps. And that is, she says, he asked, what do you think they wanted? Or I'm not sure exactly what his question was, but she looks back at him and like they were interested. She says it like they were interested. And that, for some reason, that just gives me goosebumps. Like, again, it's almost like she's describing them looking into her.
Yes, absolutely. It was very unique. You know, you mentioned you posed the analogy of like the when you have a car accident, time slows down. Well, I didn't have a car accident, but I was hit by a truck a number of years, like 4 years prior to this experience, and that's how it felt for me. So that's kind of just crazy that you mentioned that. And that's not really something a lot of people know about me. I don't know if the two are interrelated. I have no idea. They maybe are not, but I've always felt that it's something that I can add to the experience of who I am. And there's a reason why I experienced both those things.
Yeah.
Whether they're related or not.
I do want to talk to you how your life has been going and all that, but a couple of things first. And that is, how do you feel when people are trying to like debunk the whole thing? Or first of all, I want to ask you, in the beginning, right after this happened, did anyone try to talk you out of what you saw?
Absolutely. Oh my gosh, almost everybody. Really? My parents didn't. My parents didn't. And of course, people who interviewed us, there were very few people that I actually felt comfortable enough with there were a few people that I felt actually were genuinely interested in what we had experienced rather than just having a news story, if that makes sense. And even at 11, you can tell like people who are just like there to just talk to you and, okay, what did you see? Sort of going through the general questions. What did you see? What did you hear? You know, there were some people who were a lot more in depth, like Dr. Mack and a few other people. I think there was an interview, a journalist from BBC who was different too, just in the approach. So I didn't always feel that people really, even journalists and professionals or quote experts at the time, really believed in what we had seen. Mm-hmm. And there were a lot of people who tried to debunk that a lot. So that had a lot to do with why I just didn't talk about it.
Does it upset you now? Because I know I've done a little research ahead of this show, and there are people out there, of course, calling it a hoax. And like, you know, and I laugh at that because, you know, I can't imagine school children putting together such an elaborate hoax. It's ridiculous.
And, school children, Martin, in a Southern African country with no internet, very few people having cable, have no outside or very little, not no, but very limited access to outside influence about what UFOs are or could be or whatever. Like, yeah, we had nothing else to do but come up with this hoax. These, you know, 11-year-old children in Zimbabwe coming up with this. I'm like, no, it doesn't upset me. It used to. But I think that as I've gotten older, I have realized that there's obviously a reason why Randall found me so many years later. He literally did like track me down in Chicago, took some time for me to actually believe him and like respond to him because I thought it was a joke. But connecting with him means that I've been able to reconnect with my experience. And so with that comes a whole bunch of other things, of understanding of what that experience could mean. And I don't pretend to have an answer now, nor will I tomorrow, but I think over the course of my life, I absolutely will. It also has encouraged me to speak out about what I have seen because I believe in what I saw. And I thought, well, suppressing it indicates that I don't believe in what I saw, regardless of what everybody else thinks or may think.
Wow, that's really interesting.
And you know, I got to say something if I can jump in real quick.
Yeah, go ahead, Randy.
Yeah, I mean, this is not just a few people. And, you know, there were many witnesses outside the school that were adults that had their own experience with either this mostly with this craft, but there was a person after, the day after Ariel. I mean, there's a lot more than... there's a lot of other facts that have come forward over the long time that I've been making this film that give a lot of validity to all the children's testimony.
Randy, wasn't there a lot of sightings in the area after that? I don't know about before that, but after that.
There were on the day before, the night before, the morning of the Ariel event on a farm near the Ariel school, and the day after. On that Saturday, it was in the evening. So there's just a lot. There was a pilot that was flying at three pilots actually that were flying at 25,000 feet the night before. They actually had all seen this thing fly by and they couldn't explain it. It disturbed them enough to get back to Johannesburg Airport where they were flying from Botswana. So they're passing the Zimbabwean border. When they saw this and enough to ask the radar controller, did you see anything on radar? Because this thing had apparently appeared on their left-hand wing, flew across right directly in front of them and crossed the entire horizon in 4 seconds, which is unheard of. And, you know, these guys see meteorites and, satellite reentries and that all the time. And they actually had it on radar for a few seconds in Johannesburg Airport. Anyway, this is just one of many, many other things that give validity to Salma and many others that were there that day.
Thank you. Randy, I'm going to be talking to you in a little bit about how you put this film together and all that. But thanks and anytime you want to jump in, that's great. Anytime you want to jump into the comment.
I was wondering if the pilots described the...
Go ahead.
If the pilots described the object the same as the children did,
they described it as a ball of light. That's all he could say. It was a ball of light. They all thought it was another plane. There were two planes in the air at the time, and they thought it was the plane that was coming to formate. These were two commercial airlines, and they were, you know, in Africa, you can actually fly in formation and you can get away with it. But they had mistaken.
You can.
A lot of things happen in Africa. So he had thought it was on his right-hand side. The pilot said, no, I'm on your left-hand side. And he said, well, what's that on my right-hand side? And they both, all three of them, the two pilots in one plane and the one in the other, all saw this ball. And that's how they described it. It was a ball of light. And they were looking at it for a while, and then it crossed there right in front of them. And the speed just was incredible. At that speed, when you're at 25,000 feet, you have a much bigger horizon. It's a much larger distance across the planet. So to disappear like that within 4 seconds was highly unusual for them.
I guess anything going that fast turns into a ball of light.
Right.
Probably.
Well, Randy, didn't some of the kids say that they saw a ball of light and it turned into the disc, or am I getting that wrong?
Several of the kids said that they saw a flash of light in the sky.
Yeah, okay. And
before all this stuff happened, there was a lot that happened, you know, there was a lot that happened beforehand. That several of the children had seen in the sky. Okay. Some say it was a flash of light. Some had actually seen the silver thing. And then, but there was a flash of light involved. That I do know. Everybody, a lot of people at least had reported that.
All right, everyone. So that's it for the first hour of the show. Thank you so much for listening. And it continues to be an excellent show. If you've been on the fence about supporting our show and getting to listen to the full shows, well, I would suggest that you you take the dive and do it for only $2 or more a month. We also have yearly subscriptions that you can pay just one time a year, and that'll get you to all the shows, plus the Everything Else show as well. And all that information is on podcastufo.com. Thanks so much for listening. And again, you know, I got to mention, if you can't listen to the full show, it's always available on the Dark Matter Digital Network on Thursday evenings at 10 to midnight. All right. So thanks so much. And our guest next week in studio will be Paul Eno. He's driving all the way up from Rhode Island.